the New York Ska Jazz Ensemble with In Motion. It's from their 2011 album, Double Edge. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And, you know, I really don't like to deprive anybody of their time. And we did not have the time yesterday to accommodate the calls that we had, more calls than time to accommodate them. So we will extend our discussion from yesterday to today. We were talking yesterday about this feeling that we have no defenses visible after this election, and particularly facing what we are facing. We don't see that we have much to work with in the way of defense. So the people feel helpless. I mean, it's as if the election is over, shut it down. You know, we get back to some kind of business, some semblance of business, and we wait for the next 4 years until we awaken again to participate in politics. But politics is every day. And particularly because we know what's coming, or we have a very strong sense of what's coming, we see it in formation, and it's already daunting. We wonder, where did our defenses go? Where did the movements go? Where did the political defense system go? And we certainly have to call that into question. So we will continue that discussion today at 888-874-4888. You may have heard by now that, at least this is what's reported, there are all kinds of layers to this story that are not being reported, but the angle that is being reported is that Donald Trump is considering not bringing charges against Hillary Clinton for a multitude of crimes, especially related to the private server and her role at the Clinton Foundation. Well, you know, there are all kinds of ways of interpreting this story in this time that we're in. We can't jump to conclusions, and we should resist these kinds of things. These are ways in which they try to get a reading as to how people would react. They're jerking us around. So if you wish to comment on that too, we can certainly talk about that. I'm more concerned, however, about the state of affairs. It seems as if, you know, the things went dormant after the election, and this is precisely the time to rev it up, because we have to be inserted into the national discussion and debate. A new government is forming. Whether we, you know, the parties that we supported, whether they won or they lost, it's really immaterial. The fact is that they remain, or should remain, viable as a vehicle for our voices. And they kind of disappeared. They ran to the tall grass. And it's a very serious infraction. And it's actually one of the things that they should not do. Specifically because, you know, a splinter party or third party, an independent party or movement did not score the number of votes or did not achieve their political objectives. That's one thing. They ought to do some internal auditing to find out what went wrong there. But certainly, in the middle of all of this that's going on, we're not hearing very much from these parties. And this is exactly the point at which they ought to enter the fray. They still have a job to do. We saw, for example, Bernie Sanders. He still keeps, he's give it to him. He believes he's not out of it yet. He is still talking now more than ever. He's even directly talking to and about Hillary Clinton and about the shortcomings of the Democratic Party, even as the party co-opted him and he allowed himself to be co-opted as an outreach chair for the party. But he has revved it up. He recognizes, as people should in the political realm, that at times like this is when you ought to really stretch out. I know it's easier said than done, and it does tax already overtaxed small parties. They don't have the funds and so forth. I get that. But that doesn't mean that they should be totally absent. And this is one of the criticisms. You don't come to life every 4 years and then disappear or fall off the cliff, and you come to life in another 4 years. Here's a vivid example of what it is I was talking about. And it's not so much about criticizing the parties, it's about saying to them, get a grip. People are depending on you. They're looking to you for leadership. They want to support a leadership that is cognizant of what they must do, especially in times of crisis. And this is a time of crisis. You have to be present and accounted for, and you have to continue to lead. You can't just say, well, we didn't make it this time. See you 4 years from now when we try it again. No. This administration has got to know that even if it won, it isn't the only party. It's not the uniparty system. There are constituencies out here that are very concerned about this thing called democracy. And they have a right to occupy space in the daily discourse. They have a right to hold whoever won, whichever party won, accountable. They have a right, more than anything else, to defend the interests of people who have had no defenses at all. That's why they gravitated to these systems in the first place. That independent parties, third parties as we call them, were a logical choice because they provided political defense. We have to insist that they must remain present and accounted for, especially in this time. We can tell from the formation of this cabinet. You don't have to guess where it's going. You see who's being selected. You hear the programs that they intend to enact, whether we like them or not. This is the time to be present and accounted for. What are your thoughts? Let's go to New Hampshire. Valerie, you're on the air.
Hi, you, Therese.
Hello.
Hopefully, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, good, good, good. Okay, I just was turning down my sound in my computer. You were just talking about parties, and what I wanted to do was to hopefully right on target with the topic you'd like, is the parties that abandoned us or the parties that actually are they going to do anything now, or have they, I think you said, disappear in the grass? And I think my experience here is, well, my experience is actually I'm quite old and I'm disabled, so I keep getting despairing that I can't do more, but I'm trying as much as possible. is to communicate. And one of the things I've found in my area, very urban, very much, certainly north of me, very much Trump country. And so that the only people who were for Hillary Clinton were sort of your liberal, you know, wishy-washy people. I was for neither. And so I thought I'd check on the Democratic Party. Technically, I registered as a Democrat a long time ago. And so what I did was I contacted a few people I knew were in the party, and I spent about 2 weeks doing some homework. How many members are they? Where are the members of the party? When do they meet? What are their plans, etc.? I also found that there's actually another group of people, about 60, which is exciting, who want to do something, but they don't know what to do. So let's put them aside for a minute. But the Democratic Party, what I've picked up is that you're absolutely right. The Democrats in New Hampshire, we will have four women and one new senator. The other, there will be Jean Shaheen, who is a senator who's been there forever, and a representative, and then a new a rep from the southern part. There's only two districts in New Hampshire. And they've disappeared. You know, I mean, what are they doing? So I've been talking to some people, and what I've done is this so far, and certainly, you know, would love some feedback from you or some ideas, is I've called, as an example, I've called the one of the legislators' offices. It's my legislator later. And I don't know where she is. You know, she's disappeared, right? Nothing. Nothing in the paper, you know. Annie Custer is going to do this or that. No, 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 no. And I managed to reach a staff person, which is about the best you can do if you call. And what I got back from the staff person is, you know, well, you want to be on the newsletter. Annie's going to support Nancy Pelosi because she's been the lead, you know, the minority leader and all this stuff, right? The stuff you'd expect. And what I did is I said, yes, I would like to be on your newsletter, but Annie needs to send out a newsletter not once a month. She needs to send something out weekly or even more frequently on what she is going to do. Now, she's only there, I said, for two years, and people are getting very disgruntled. They want to know what their government is, you know, their reps are doing for them. And then I sort of, you know, played that, well, you know, nobody's going to vote for you if you don't come through. But is that a good direction? I mean, I just need to talk to somebody, you know.
No, I think you should be congratulated for taking the initiative in mm-hmm. your own way to assert yourself as okay. a constituent who should be apprised of what is happening. Because, okay. like I said, you clearly are sensitive to the idea that there's a change a-coming. It's almost here. And we need to be more in touch with what's going on in Washington than we normally would have. But mm-hmm. a part of this whole thing, New Hampshire would have, I'm guessing I did not look at the numbers closely enough, but I imagine that the Green Party did quite well, when I say quite well, in terms of its own expectations, that it got support in New Hampshire.
Yeah, they did, but not as much as I suspect they should have. I sent in a absentee ballot because as I said, I'm disabled. And what happened was that it only said something like 700. I don't know. It was a very small number for the Green Party, which I did decide to vote for Jill Stein.
But here's the thing. This is exactly where you get mm. into the fray. The party mm. should go to these areas. For example, I was looking at the numbers just last night. Hillary uh-huh. Clinton, despite the fact that they did everything possible to rally the black vote, got 2 uh-huh. million votes fewer than Obama did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's significant, which means that there's a huge pool of African Americans absolutely turned off, not just by Hillary Clinton, by the Democratic Party as well. This is when you zoom in. You study and you find out where these people were who did not vote for the Democratic Party, and you mount a very aggressive a recruitment campaign, if you will, to get people to understand, to introduce the party, to introduce what it stood for, that they could have identified with, but that's water under the bridge. Looking to the future, this is what the party ought to do now, and engage people in the vision of the Green Party. And this should be for any other party. This is what I'm saying. But to just leave the void there and pretend it doesn't exist is why these parties suffer in the end. Thanks so much, Valerie, for your call and for getting us started today. But really, you should be congratulated and you should feel very good about being proactive. That's great. Thank you so much for that lesson as well. Julie from New York, what have you to say?
Well, I just I wanted to call yesterday, but we didn't get a chance to discuss it. But since we're following up, I wanted to offer to the person yesterday that spoke about the Green Party that I'm not sure if he's on, if we're, there's so many different ways of communicating now, but with regard to Jill Stein, I have been I've been glad to see that she has continued the discussion. She and Shama Sawant did the fireside chats that she had been doing weekly during the election have really continued, and they did one together on Sunday. So to me, that was I felt like she wasn't just dropping the ball. So. Maybe if people could, everybody's not on Facebook, of course, but I don't imagine that was the only, maybe that is her only outlet at this point, but I just wanted to point out that she is continuing the discussion, and there's going to be a gathering of the Green Party in January in Washington, so she is continuing to communicate with her support, the people that supported her, so I just wanted to offer that.
Well, that's good to hear. That's very good to hear. I'm looking at the numbers and trying to figure out on my own what is the story that they're telling us. And again, what they're telling us is that we should look away from the results themselves. You know, we saw, okay, Trump was elected, Hillary Clinton lost. Okay, but that's looking at it from the duopoly's point of view. But when you look at it from the point of view of what is the possibility for future success of third parties, period. Not just the Green Party, but you have the Working Families Party, you have the Socialist Party, you have the Independence Party. So you have all kinds of parties and movements that should be fully awakened and in full action right now, doing things like recruitment, doing things like explaining their party philosophy, getting into the communities. A lot of, you know, shoe leather should be worn out in this period where people are just knocking on doors, pretending that you're just starting an operation, you're just starting your election operation. That's the kind of energy we need to see, because there are a lot of people you just confirmed it. There are a lot of people who don't know these things are happening. And it is not really necessarily up to them to go seek these things out. A large part of the responsibility is about the parties finding innovative ways to get their message out and to study the landscape so that they don't repeat the same mistakes over and over again. But we need them. We need independent parties of any type right now, because we need a coalition of effort. We know we're going to be engaged in fighting this administration, and we need muscle. individual muscle is easily vanquished. But if we see that the parties, wherever they fall on the political spectrum, if they are working in their own ways to promote a political consciousness and a political reawakening, this is what is needed right now.
I agree. I hope that will be the case. Since I printed my own flyers from the internet, from the Green Party's website, instead of throwing them in the trash, I decided to keep them because I gave them out here on the Upper West Side. But of course, this was real Democratic territory. But I thought I would keep them with me when I go to other places now, because so many people, when I would say Jill Stein, they had no idea who she was. So even though they were for the 2016 campaign, it's a way of getting the word out so that her name is known, which it really wasn't.
Thank you for doing that, and thank you for your contribution today. I'm so glad that you were able to get in today, even though you weren't able to get in yesterday. We had quite a few calls yesterday. So this is why we're following up today, to give people the opportunity to throw their two cents in. Thanks so much for your call, Julie. From Chicago, 888-874-4888. It's Henry.
Hey, Utrice, how's it going?
Okay. How about you?
Going good. I think the first thing we always have to do is change our mentality and change our way of thinking about, you know, this whole process. And if you do that, I think you'll probably be a little less confused and more prone to, you know, making some, you know, real changes. I wanted to let you know, like, and just as a plugger here, the first thing with politics that, you know, you have to do is kind of like capture the economic arm of it. So here in Chicago, there is a marketplace that's going to be happening on Black Friday, but we have a lot of black businesses who will be there to support the people and also support what we have here in a lot of grassroots organizations in Chicago, having a Blackout Friday. So we're trying to start with the economic plan first in order to gain a little political access, because, you know, here in Chicago, and I'm pretty sure everywhere else, if the people can at least redirect the money to other places, that in itself is power within the people. So that's where we're kind of starting here. That'll be our starting point here. I'm not sure what everybody else is doing, but to me, I think that's a great starting point to try to get the businesses together within the community, try to, you know, sell, you know, the businesses within our community to keep recycling the dollars, you know, within our community, instead of the dollars going out of the community.
Well, it's a very good effort. It has, of course, as you know, it has a history. This has happened, and this has been called for many, many years, and it has proven to be successful, but it also has been proven to be sporadic. People don't stick with it for the long haul. They like the novelty of the idea. They like the newness of it, many of them having no reference point about the earlier efforts made. But here's a question. What would encourage this move and this movement to have staying power?
Well, that's a good, I mean, that is a good concern. And it's something that we were concerned about as well when we put this together, because, yeah, you're right. Economic movements, economic boycotts, you know, to be effective, need to at least last a couple of years. I mean, you know, as we all know, the Montgomery boycott movement lasted a year. So it's something that we're going to try to educate with, you know, the consumers that, you know, that come into the market, to let them know, hey, you know, this is not going to be our last time doing this. We're going to keep doing this and keep doing this throughout the year, because, you know, this is something that we have to let people know. This could be a good starting point for us, you know, economics, because obviously, you know, voting isn't doing much for us. And, you know, the thing too is that with politicians, you know, politicians are not going to listen to us unless we withhold our votes and direct the money somewhere else. And so we're going to try to, you know, like I said, we're going to try to educate a lot of the people that are there to let them know that, you know, don't let this be the last time, you know, we see you guys supporting this. You know, we need to support this, you know, all year round and as long as we can, so we can obtain, you know, some kind of economic and political power as well.
Look, this is a very, very noble effort, and you should be encouraged by people in the community. It should be an encouraging thing to see people actually engaged at a level where they can control it in doing something like this. Here's a question. This, in effect, is a kind of, this is mobilization. You're mobilizing people. When do you think, or what would be the indicator to you and others organizing this, that you will switch from mobilizing to organizing?
It's a very good question. And we've kind of focused a lot of our energies of trying to, you know, handle the economic arm of it.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, you got to start somewhere, and you're starting. That's the main thing.
Exactly.
So
that's
what
the
I'm
whole
trying
point,
to say
starting.
Is there a little kind of a sneak attack you can build into this where, you know, you pass out leaflets and you encourage, did you know so-and-so, you know, engaging people, which is the beginning of organizing them.
Well,
this is one of the things that we lack in our community. We're good at mobilizing, but we always should think about when we mobilize, it's also an opportunity to organize.
Well,
maybe it will grow into that, but you have a great start.
Yeah, and Utrice, I just thought about this too, but the thing is that we do have somewhat of a plan once we, you know, if we can get this, you know, really off the ground. However, you know, as you know, we can't, like, really divulge a lot of information on what we plan to do because obviously we have people watching us.
I know. It used to drive me nuts in New York City. We'd have these leaders, you know, these impromptu leaders, and they'd get up, on Tuesday at 11 o'clock, we will be meeting at such and such a place.
Yeah.
And we marched
and
give the whole route and everything. And then they get surprised because when they show up, so do tons of police.
Yes, and infiltrators and everything. You know, you don't want that element in your crowd because that's the thing about it. We don't try to advertise as much. I mean, we like this to be a more organic type of movement where, you know, word of mouth goes around. Obviously, we're going to get, you know, a couple of people who are going to be trying to infiltrate us. But at the same time, you know, it's the start, and we have to start somewhere.
Yes, you will. When do you start this?
It's on Friday. We're going to be doing it on Black Friday. You know, to try to at least compete with some of the Black Friday shoppers out there, and try to get, like I said, we got about 30 Black businesses to participate in this. So it looks like it's going to be a pretty good effort. So. And also, too, you know, the mentality of it is, you know, the place the market is going to be at is going to be at over at the Mosque Mariam where the Nation of Islam is at. Now, I know some people are kind of like, you know, reluctant because we have a lot of people outside of the nation who are also supporting this as well. So we have to, you know, get out of the mentality of, you know, division amongst religious, you know, factions as well, because you know, I know obviously people are not, some people are not fond of the Nation of Islam, but this is something that is for them. And they're all, everybody is welcome to come in and spend their money within their own community, you know, despite the banner.
Well, this is one of the tenets of the Nation of Islam, which, of course, built heavily on the instructions of Marcus Garvey, that you have to control your own economics. And this is a great thing to hear. So let us hear how it's proceeding and progressing, and certainly what the results are. But think about it, you mobilizing, but kind of sneak in a little organizing there too.
All right.
Thanks, Henry, for your call. 888-874-4888. Are you politically protected right now? That's the question. Lincoln from New York, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you, Yuki?
Hello, Lincoln. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm going to take a little different twist on this. First of all, I was never flabbergasted. I was never startled by Trump's election because I saw Hillary's election to be worse if it had occurred. And so I kind of find it, I think it's because we're all so inundated with miseducation that we're all so flustered. As a matter of fact, I am not a Trump supporter, but I would rather see Trump win than Hillary, especially because of all her dastardly deeds. Her and Obama, and we keep saying Hillary, not realizing that Obama was in cahoots with murdering Gaddafi. And, you know, a lot of times I keep bringing up this name, Gaddafi. And it is my reason for bringing up Gaddafi. It's not because it's the only crime that Hillary and her husband and Obama have committed, but it's the worst crime they have committed. And most people, when they speak of Gaddafi, because they want to excuse Obama, they never mention his name. They forget that at the last UN assembly, to justify the murder of Gaddafi, Obama literally referred to Gaddafi as a tyrant.
And what do you think of the situation now? The election has been held.
No, I am trying to put some dots together. That's why I'm bringing this in. I think that first of all, we have to approach this more not just as a domestic issue, but as an international issue. We also have to recognize that we are all victims of centuries of miseducation, and miseducation specifically about politics. With all and throughout history, politics have moved away from what it should be, and politics should be about government becoming servants of the people. I keep hearing you all using this word. We need new leadership. I don't know what leadership you're talking about, because every time you talk about leadership, it's like a congregation of a church, and it could be a mega, it could be a rip-off church, but you are destructing because for some reason you all feel like you need someone to lead it. We need, first of all, to drop this old European idea of government, and we need to go back to what government should be. And it should be a communal and service and people service centered thing. We should remove all the celebrity stigmas about government. Politicians should not be celebrities. They should not be treated as no heroes, no one to bow down to. And then we would make them more answerable. Now,
but what I want you to do, if you could, hold a second. You laid out, because we do have a lot of people trying to get in. What I'd like you to do is to bring us to what you are thinking about the question on the table. Do you think at this point, the election over, Trump elected, about to take office, do you feel that generally, people are kind of neglected right now at a moment when we should see far more involvement from the parties, other than the duopoly, the parties that also participated, and the people who presented themselves as having something of a workable idea, that there's a sense of abandonment, and we really need to see some kind of engagement here, and we're not seeing it so far.
Well, I supported the Green Party, but I don't support it from the position that most people, like I see everybody running around, they want a Bernie, or they want a Jill, or they want a Trump. I supported the Green Party because it was articulating the best thing for the people. That's my reason for supporting it. However, I think that you should take the Green Party and let it become, and parties like that become a people's movement and not a person movement. Bernie Sanders, from the beginning, I never supported him. He was a sellout. But the people, we are so busy just looking, fawning over people and being sycophants that we are not able to really clearly criticize them. And so, yes, we must continue. What we must do is we must have comprehensive education of the people. And we must educate the people in such a way that they must now see themselves as an integral part of the party, meaning that we're not looking up to no leader, but the people we should create a referendum system, of enlightened people, where the people come and the people vote on the direction in which the party goes, not the people who appoint themselves as leaders of the party making these decisions, but rather every time the party makes a decision, the people have to vote. It's a referendum system. But we must educate the people in a comprehensive way, making them understand truly the meaning of governance, and not just as it relates to us domestically. Because when America goes about the place and kills people by the millions and hundreds, etc., I do not see the outrage like I see about Trump. And it shows that we are very hypocritical and disingenuous, because Trump's rise to power is nowhere near what America did in Vietnam when they killed over 3 million Vietnamese. It's nowhere near what they did to Allende when they killed over 30,000 Chileans. It's nowhere near what they did to Panama when they killed thousands of people displacing Noriega, who used to work for the CIA. It's nowhere near what they did to Mossadegh in Iran. And so when we're going around crying about Trump, we are hypocrites, because what Trump will do is nothing. It pales in the sight of the wickedness America has done throughout the centuries. And to show you how silly we are.
But at some point, but if I could just say this here, I understand your points, but I think you're a little off on a tangent. We want to look at the performance of alternative political systems in this recent election right now, right at this minute, when the country is about to experience a seismic shift in terms of...
It needs to experience a seismic shift.
Whether it needs to or not, the fact is, this is what is happening. The question is, how are our political systems responding right now to this, other than the fact that they ran in an election, other than the fact that they got some votes and so forth, in the aftermath of the election, what is your estimation of these systems that we desperately need? We need third parties, no question about it.
Okay, for example, the Green Party, the Jill Stein's party, I think what they should do, just like, say, the WBAI, etc., you have good information to impart to the people, so you need financing. So I think that the Green Party should right now start mounting a huge fundraising effort. I'm talking about a fundraising effort that should yield them, that they should have this starting point. How could we amass $50 million, $100 million, and just keep doing fundraising? And in the meantime, what they do is they keep having little pockets, have little branches in all the communities throughout the 50-something states of America and keep educating people. So when 4 years come, they will have millions of dollars that they can have advertisements, etc., on TV, and even so they have to overcompromise to the extent that they cannot be locked out, because they will have ways of making themselves very visible rather than being inconspicuous. You know, they can't take the regular route. They have to come up with something new, something different, and that is the one I would suggest. They should fundraise, and that would also actually keep them mentally active toward, because they would be saying, like, okay, if I could really say, okay, we're going to fundraise for WBAI, fundraise for we're fundraising for the third party, fundraising. And so it would also keep the people organically involved, and the people would say, okay, we're working on the future when we will change the system completely.
Well,
hello.
Yes, it's a good plan. In fact, this was one of the things I had said about the Green Party and all other parties. You have to, and I said these things under the aegis of talking about our year of reckoning. We have to come to terms with where we are, whether we made sound decisions. I'm talking about as parties or as movements. Where are we going? Where are we proposing to take people along? And what is the obligation? The obligation is to be prepared to lead. And that includes being ready. We are not ready. Our political systems have shown over and over again, we're not ready. And perhaps this is a time to revisit this question about what it means to be ready to take on the system. They already have their system. It is working perfectly. But in so many ways, we see that we are not ready. We are not ready. And there are ways that we should be ready. And let's face those questions and get them resolved, because we cannot go through another election being unready. We just can't afford it. So whatever it is they've got to do.
I wouldn't say that we weren't ready. I would say that we were financially strapped.
Then it means you're not ready. Because being ready includes. Being ready, Lincoln, includes having a war chest. I mean, this is what politics calls for. I didn't make up the rules. This is what it is. You have to have the kinds of money that would allow you to achieve certain things. You have to have it, which means you cannot wake up in year four and discover that you need to have a war chest. So
you and I know what we mean by being ready. But we have to actually articulate to people what being ready is, because I've heard you say many times, you're not ready. We have to compartmentalize the struggle. And we have to say, okay, part of the struggle is educating the people. Part of the struggle is organizing the people. Part of it is mobilizing. But the part that we have been ignoring is the financial gathering part. It's not that we weren't ready or we weren't working.
Point. If one of these pillars is missing, you're not ready. You should not be in a fight with one hand tied behind your back. You know you're operating from a point of weakness. And therefore, to have expectations of victory is crazy. You got to have all your ducks in a row, and you're ready. And even so, victory is not assured. But it is certainly, you have a better shot when you have your basic pillars in play, that you're ready to go. You may not have the great grand conventions with all that glitter falling from the sky, and because that's not part of your program, but you will have a meeting. It's going to be serviceable and so forth. The idea is, I just want people to spend some time in preparation, get ready, and don't go out there with your butt hanging out, because you're just spinning wheels, and you're adding to this concept I've talked about creating political anesthesia. Every time you lose, and it most often is because you're not ready, you numb people. It becomes a political anesthetic, and you defeat your own purpose. So you have to pay attention to this. You got to pay attention to the numbers. If you're getting fewer votes, far fewer votes in this election than in the last election, and we're seeing a downward trend, we've got to ask questions. What are you doing wrong? What should you be doing? Why aren't you growing? Like any endeavor that is progress-minded and growth-minded, you have to do these things.
Well, what, just one thing before I depart, all right? And I want to go back to what you were talking about.
But we have to move fast because we have other people waiting.
Let me just tell you. Ralph Nader was one of the best candidates ever, one of, right? I think I'm actually the best. that's a joke. Anyway, look at Ross Perot. You remember Ross Perot?
Sure.
Ross Perot was a third party. Ross Perot got 70% of the vote. Why? It was because of his money.
That's right. That's Ross a large Perot part of it, but not the only part. Ross Perot took on the right establishment himself. Yes, he had his own money, which was the point he made, that he did not want any public money financing his political effort. But Ross Perot, by the time he declared for his candidacy, he was ready. And it showed. He got 70% first time around. You can't deny the correlation here. You're either ready or you're not. And there's no waffling involved. And we can't excuse underperformance. We have to demand these parties step up to the plate and get themselves prepared for leadership
and to present themselves
as viable choices, so that people don't feel that year after year, election after election, they're investing in a losing proposition. I'm tired of it. And I think that if there was a way to encourage these folks to just set aside a couple of months just studying the operations of their parties in a serious and critical way, not to, you know, blame anybody, but just to find out how could you do this thing better. Being small doesn't make you insignificant. You could be very powerful, and even as a small, tightly run ship. But, we have to have the courage to do that. And that's what I talked about, this point of reckoning. Not only with the parties, we all have to do it. We're all guilty of being quite satisfied. We're not acting like we understand ourselves to be in crisis. We're not acting like we believe we have an obligation to do something about it, that it's somebody else's job to fix it. And these are the things we have to come to terms with and decide which way we want to go. But let's not go another year with all this wishy-washy stuff and all this unresolved stuff, because it's killing us. It is killing us when we don't demand performance, top performance. I don't care how small your operation is, but you're on point. And you can show progress, and you can show ingenuity, and you can show that you're observing, you have your own path cut out, that you have studied things. Like I said, 2 million black votes are unaccounted for between last election and this election. Somebody should be out there like crazy saying, this is an audience we got to get right away. These are people we need to talk to right away. You can't wait until another 4 years. Thanks, Lincoln, for your call. Enjoyed it.
Okay, have a wonderful. Okay, bye.
Thank you. E from Edgewater, you have some time, but a little bit, I'm afraid.
Hello, Yatrice.
Hello.
Hope you're feeling well today.
Yes, I am. Every time I connect with listeners, I feel fantastic.
Well, that is wonderful, and that is great, as Donald Trump would say.
But, it's huge.
Yesterday, you had a bleak picture, and Jace agreed that it was a bleak picture, but it's not even close to the bleak picture that we're in. We're up the creek without a paddle. We're not in Kansas anymore, Toto, because our defenses are down, and the defenses that we used to have was a free press. Without a free press, we're out there in no man's land without any defense. And I think it started with the Watergate. They said they can't have this happen again, so they had to start taking control of the press. And they got rid of all the ethical people, and they replaced them with people that they wanted in there. So we got Anderson Coopers and Charlie Roses and all these puppets feeding us an illusion. This whole thing is an illusion. How could Donald Trump be the president? It's an illusion. I thought they had it planned for Hillary to win, but it's better for Trump for Hillary to win, because he can now clear her name. And it's ridiculous. What are we going to do without a press? They were the buffer zone. They were keeping the political parties in line. They would expose things that need to be exposed. Now it's all covered up. We're in big trouble. What do you think?
Well, yes, the media have, as an institution, been failing for many, many years, and for all kinds of reasons. Number one is the advertising budgets have shrunk and have shifted away from traditional media and to digital media. And the old stodgy media, like the New York Times, the revenues are falling precipitously. They can't keep pace. They can't keep pace with operations that are run more efficiently. They're running smarter. They're running tighter. And they're making a ton more of money. And they are faster at reporting the news than most of the traditional news sources. That doesn't mean that they're also doing a better job. It's just that this is how it has evolved. They're in tune with a new generation, a new generation that wants things fast and on the go. So they have tried to adapt. So there are a lot of reasons that the media organizations that we used to look to as a source of independent analysis, they've been co-opted, they've been bought. You know, you could stick them with a fork because they're done. Where does that leave us? The traditional sources of media really also, with their demise or with their failings, many of them have shut down. They have basically gone out of business. with that, you have some of the best people in the business also going with them. I know, for example, in the 1960s, when the nation's newsrooms, the gatekeepers of news, were almost all white, to come into compliance, if you will, with the Civil Rights Act, the white newspapers and television stations raided the black talent from the black newspapers and destroyed the institution. They took them. And now it's happening again with the people who are now dominating the ranks of the mainstream media. They can't fit. They can't work within the new environments because they haven't been trained to. So they are still beholden to a system because that's what feeds them. The digital world has created a line, AD and BC of media. You know, you're either part of the dinosaur era or you're with the jet set, the people who are making things happen through the news. And then we have the coalescence of news and business, news and advertising. And the advertising community has really gained a lot of clout. They almost dictate what the news should be. And they have inordinate effect on news coverage, the quality of news coverage. And we saw that with the election. So there's a lot that's going on with news. It's in a serious state of transition, and it's not necessarily all good. But that brings us to the end of the program. I just heard my cue. Thanks, E from Edgewater, for calling. Thank you all for calling and sharing your very, very treasured thoughts with us today. I really appreciate it. So we'll see each other tomorrow. Coming up next is The Infectious Myth with David Crow. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege, I mean that, to be in your company. Bye-bye.